When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Shirtless, it's the shirtless. We're singing the shirtless. It's the shirtless, the shirtless plenty show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the Euros edition. This is your host Dean, and today I am here with my friend, my co-host, Coach. What's going on, Coach?
Sack him. I don't even like England. I don't even like England. That's just the fact. Those of you that have followed this long enough know that I don't like England, but I'm fed up of seeing this shit. So sack him.
You can't even like wait to get to the England section
before
you start the campaign.
By the way, I'm Coach, yeah. Lob Rucci on Twitter, all that shit. Sack him, please. Thank you.
All right, before we get to that, there were two other games to look at today. Serbia and Slovenia.
Yeah.
Tied 1-1 in what was, I believe, the most peaceful Balkan game of the tournament
so far.
I got the impression, I didn't really get to watch this one too crazy, Coach, but I got the impression that both teams were kind of wasteful in this one.
Like, yeah, I'll be honest with you. I think Slovenia just accepted that they weren't as good as Serbia. And they knew they had an incredible goalkeeper, basically. And just...
Yeah, no block.
Yeah, and just banked on that. And to be honest, Serbia didn't really create that many great chances, if I'm being honest. But they did put them under quite a bit of pressure. And they had most of the ball. But the goal that... the goal that Slovenia scored was really, really funny because their fullback scored it. And the only reason why they scored that goal is because... The sub that came on eventually, his first touch was so bad. Sorry, he got subbed off in the end, my bad, sorry. But his first touch was so bad when he was trying to take on their fullback in Karsinic that he just nicked the ball off him, basically, and he's passed it into midfield and just carried his run into the box. But he's nicked it off him, I think, 30 yards from his own goal. Do you know how bad your first touch has to be, like, for you to cause a goal? Basically, from that end. And it just made me laugh because fundamentals like that are always going to be important. You know, it can literally cost your team a goal, even if you lose it 30 yards from the opposition goal kind of thing. And it was a really good, really well-worked team goal as well. But
yeah, the problem with that goal for me, Coach, real quick, was that the way the fullback finished it at the far post, just because I saw that goal live, and it just took me back to the Emirates when Arsenal hosted a team whose name starts with Aston.
Oh. Yeah.
I was like, can someone cut this cross out before someone finishes that the far post?
Yeah.
No one did that. Went all the way through. And this guy scored the goal in the 69th minute.
Nice.
And you know the rules here. Nice. On we go. Carry on, Coach.
Yeah. It was a good goal. And then he got a bit confident after that. He had a shot afterwards, you know, thinking, yeah, I'm the man now kind of thing. As you do as a fullback, you know, you start feeling yourself. But Serbia made some interesting changes. I mean, Vlahovic just seems to... I don't think Vlahovic has finished a game so far. And, you know, he keeps on getting subbed off for Jovic. Tadic eventually came off as well. And I was actually a bit confused why Tadic didn't start the last game unless he was injured. But he came off as well. But...
Yeah, he was beefing the coach, you know, because after that game, when he got interviewed, he was talking about, I'm the most talented player on the team, I should be starting.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, he's not wrong, you know, but the coach obviously checked him for that. You can't be talking all crazy during the tournament and shit, you know. But yeah, he got to play today, and I wouldn't say he covered himself in glory.
No.
I mean, they were losing when he went off.
No. So he, he went off kind of thing. And Jovic came on. Jovic had... I think a couple of chances before he actually scored, and it was essentially the last kick of the game. And I won't lie to you, I wasn't mad that they scored. To be honest, I feel like they did deserve something from the game. and it keeps the group interesting for me as well. That's the main thing. I hate when we go into the last game and the top two teams are really qualified. Like, I hate that. Like, let's keep the jeopardy going all the way through, please. Thank you very much.
You think the Slovenians would have done everything in their power to hang on to that victory, you know, because it would have been a historic victory. Yeah. For them. I believe it would have been the first time they beat Serbia. And just like they're the most famous Slovenian on the planet, Luka Doncic, these niggas cannot defend. No. So they paid the price, but they're both still in the tournament for now. Both of them would definitely not be making it. The next game we're covering is Spain against Italy. And I have to say, Coach, this was a bit anticlimactic, a bit underwhelming. Not because I expected a lot of out of Italy, but I expected more than we got. Yeah. I mean, the score did not do Spain's dominance justice. No. This was the dominance in this game, the chance creation in this game, Nico Williams destroying Di Lorenzo all game. This was a 5-6-0 game, Coach.
Yeah, we can just talk about Nico Williams. I'd be satisfied with that, to be honest. If we just speak about Nico Williams today, I'll be satisfied with that. For real.
Do your thing. He had a great game.
Yeah, he was... I just want to know how Cucurella felt about a black man ahead of him, you know, running the show. That's my main takeaway. Well, like, how does he really feel, you know?
Well, based on how he played, he probably feels good about it because he played really well as well.
Yeah, that's probably the best game Cucurella has played in about a year. Like,
that's the best game he's played since he was linked to Man City.
Yeah, probably. But I was just looking at obviously the profiles of Spain and whatnot, and their front six profile wise is near enough what I want and like from any good team. What I'd want from my team, basically, you've got a big, strong, mobile number six who can pass and receive on a half turn. You've got two other CMs who are both excellent with the ball at their feet. They can run off people. They can also, their final pass might not be, you know, Fabregas level, for example, but they can see a pass. They can both dribble as well. And they both double, like, they help their wingers out when it comes to, you know, creating overloads as well. Like, it's really good. And then the actual wingers themselves, 1v1 demons, quick as hell, both can, like, their ball striking is great. And then they've got a center forward who does like to stay in the box, but can drop deep as well. And link up as well. It's almost like obviously the quality might not be the same as years gone by and shit, but profile wise, it's pretty near perfect, I think. For me anyway.
It's nice that you're sharing your coaching philosophy with the people. They've been waiting to find out for years now. Like, what? How does coach like to coach? Well, the problem is we call this nigga coach, but he don't be coaching shit, you know. So he just makes this shit up on the podcast to tell you people.
No, but for real, like I really enjoyed it. And in contrast to Italy, like Barella was basically playing right next to Jorginho, and I was interested to see how he came up against like Pedri or Ruiz, and he got battered, to be honest. Pedri was running off him a lot in that second half, but Pedri wasn't that great in the first half. I'll be honest with you, I think my favorite player from Italy today was Bastoni. Like,
well, I mean, their best player was probably Donnarumma.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Just one of those days where, you know, they were just on the back foot the whole game. Yeah. They couldn't really get out. They couldn't sustain pressure. When they made substitutions at halftime, I think Jorginho and Fratesi both came off, both midfielders for Italy. Yeah. Cambiaso and what's the other guy's name? Cristante.
Yeah.
Those guys came on. Cristante, I think his first touch was a yellow card.
Yeah.
It was a booking immediately. And Cambiaso's first touch was to give the ball to Spain.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't going to be Italy's day. And it's actually admirable that they didn't lose by more.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think this is heritage for them. They don't mind suffering in the game.
Mm-hmm.
They can steal the result at the end. And they almost did. There was a point in the second half where Rodri made a very rare Rodri. Yeah. They can basically pass it to, I forget who he passed it to, but the cross went in for Retegi, who had also come on as a sub, and he missed the finish there.
Yeah.
But Italy could have stolen a point from this game, which is crazy to think about given how much Spain dominated.
Yeah.
Back to the Spanish side, Coach. I thought Fabian Ruiz was actually the best of their midfielders today. And he was maybe the best in the last game as well.
Yeah, Ruiz, honestly, he's just a lovely player, right? And I think the whole Napoli to PSG thing was very much a shrewd bit of business, because there's a lot of teams in Europe that could use him, you know? There's a lot of teams that use him. And the fact that he's showing out now, even if PSG wanted to sell him, which I don't think they do, they'd be getting a lot of money for him, I think, for real. Like, he's fantastic, sure, man. And again, just the way he plays the game, he's very much, he can drop into the six as well. He doesn't mind doing that and getting the ball off the centre-backs. He doesn't mind taking the ball under pressure. He doesn't mind dribbling. You know, this is a guy that's, 6'2", I want to say. He's fantastic. Yeah. And
great technically.
Yeah. And he's left-footed.
Yes. You know, I mean, I wonder why he's not at Arsenal, to be honest with you. He feels like an Arteta man, to be honest. Yeah. Like, mainly because he's left-footed. Mm. No other reason. And we'll talk about why you need more left feet in your starting 11 when we get to England in second here.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a masterclass. Ayrze Perez came on and he looked way, you know, it's really interesting how context can change someone's career. You know, like, he was, I believe, initially at Newcastle.
And Leicester as well.
Then he was at Leicester. Then he went to Betis and looked pretty good this season, I thought, which is why he's in the Spanish national team now. And he came on today, and this game should have probably ended 3-0.
Yeah, he had two good chances.
Two really good chances almost instantly. And now I suppose Spain has 6 points. They're qualified for the next round. Mm-hmm. It was pretty easy for them. I do wonder, if you were Spanish, would you be concerned that they didn't convert more of the chances they created today? I mean, it was an own goal that they used to win this game from Calafiori, who was impressive.
I'd say it's one of those games where it just doesn't go in for you. And the fact that they still found a way in a tournament, that's the most important thing, because the next game they play, they probably win 4-0. Like, it's one of those ones where you know when you leave goals on the pitch, and then the next game they all seem to go in for you. I feel like it will be one of those situations, man. And you think about this, I think so. Nico Williams hit the bar. Lamine Yamal had one that whistled past the post that was incredibly close. Morata had a couple of good chances. Pedri should have scored in the first 2-3 minutes. Nico Williams should have scored as well from a great cross from Morata. So there's all these chances that they've created, kind of thing. They probably go in the next game, so I wouldn't be too worried about that. And on Nico Williams, you know, I don't like talking transfers and shit, but again, he's a player that a lot of teams can use.
He doesn't like talking.
No, for real. He's a lot of teams.
All right, coach, whatever.
He's a player that a lot of teams can use, kind of thing. And there's one team in particular that they're looking for another alternative from a wide area. That is, you know, that's a speed demon. And I feel like he pretty much ticks all the boxes outside of the wage thing, basically, because his wages are ridiculous. But I think just what he displayed today in a system that isn't similar to the one he plays at club level, but he did something really good. He adapted, which we'll get onto somebody else who just hasn't and can't, but he adapted and he didn't look out of place at all. He's fantastic. Like, look, Di Lorenzo is an experienced Italian fullback. He's 30 years old. He's a Scudetto winner. The captain, in fact.
He's shit, bro. Yeah, look, shit.
To be fair, he is kind of shit, actually. I think the most interesting thing about him is his hair, because I don't think he's fully white. legit.
Because he clearly has some Nigerian immigrant in his
hair.
He's
definitely got some black in him pores, like, for sure, because his hair, it's not quite adding up. It's not fully, put like this. If Tony Soprano saw him, what slur would he call him? A mooly?
he probably just faints like he did with the Uncle Ben's rice box. A mooly playing for Italy?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that even a real mooly?
Yeah, you know.
You hand me the gabagool.
Over here. No, for real, he absolutely fried it. Man, I love when I see wingers use fullbacks to boost their market price. They've come into the game looking at who's on the team. She's like, so it's you that's gonna get me my move. Okay. That's exactly what I can imagine he saw. He just saw him was like, this is lunch. I love Nico Williams. And I think, you know, even if he doesn't get a move, he's gonna light up La Liga again next year for sure, man. Like, if you're performing at club level and internationally, you've pretty much cracked the code. You that's a mark of a top player. So,
well said, coach. So to wrap up, Spain 1-0. Mm. And we move on to the game of the day. England 1-1. I suppose before we get into the actual details, and by details we mean just shitting on niggas. That pitch was horrendous, coach.
Yeah.
It was just a bad pitch. Like, and obviously it affects both teams, but I think it had a large part to play in just the general lack of control we saw in the game from both teams, to be honest. People just couldn't string passes together, couldn't make good tackles, were probably scared to get injured after like the first 5-10 minutes once they saw that the pitch was coming up. Kyle Walker had to change his boots in, you know, for to get longer studs in his boots to actually finish the game. Yeah. It was just a lot to deal with. But at no point did it feel as if England controlled the game, yeah, despite their superior talent over Denmark. Obviously, I'd say the biggest factor is blaming Southgate's muddled approach. Like, we can't tell if they're trying to press or not. If they're trying to press, then why is there a line that that deep, even though you have people who can run in the back? Like, it's all very confusing. Then there's criticism of the players individual. It's just all bad, coach. Like, there weren't a lot of positives to take out of this game.
Yeah, I mean, he admitted after the game that straight up and down said, this is not how we want to play. And then he mentioned Trent, saying when they asked him about Trent, he was like, we saw some parts of his game where he succeeded in what we wanted to do. And then he just alluded to the fact that there was other parts where he was just basically shit. And then he mentioned, obviously, the fact that England get ahead and then they don't press on. They asked him again if that's part of the game plan. He's like, nope. But it's like, you've done it for 2 games now and it's been a recurring theme in your teams from before. So no, I think it is part of your game plan. You're just lying at this point, I feel like.
Yeah.
There's no redeeming performance today from anyone. I think they were all bad.
Well, I'll give credit to Margate.
Actually, yes, him.
And I'll give credit to Bukayo Saka. Mm. Obviously, I'm biased because I'm an Arsenal fan and I love that kid, but I thought he made it clear. Every time he got the ball, he made it clear that the way, if they were going to get anything out of this game, it was going to be through him.
Yeah.
And eventually he came off. Southgate, you know, subbed him out. And at that point, I was pretty confident that England would not win the game. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if they'd actually lose the game, you know, because Denmark, as average as they were, it just kind of felt like they were going to create the chances to win the game, even though they never really did.
No, well, they were better coached. That's the bottom line. They were better coached, and they were better coached with inferior players. And I was just thinking, I just said, if we swapped coaches today, like literally, England win that game like 4-0, because this is a coach that clearly understands what he has in front of him. Because none of the Denmark players looked, even though the pitch was shitty, none of the Denmark players to me looked lost or lethargic or unsure. I saw John Stones look very unassured in his passing. When the fuck does that ever happen, guys? John Stones, unassured in his passing. Like, he just looked such a mess at times with the ball at his feet. And I just couldn't understand for the life of me why. John Stones is one of the best ever passing CBs that we've seen in the Premier League. Like, that's just a stone cold fact. And he looked unassured. So that, to me, is purely a coaching problem, let alone the midfield. Declan Rice had one of his worst games he's probably had this entire season, even though off the ball, I still think he was pretty decent. But there was a lot of shit he did that I didn't like and did annoy me. But again, there was a lot of shit that Trent did. But Trent's not a midfielder. There's a lot of shit that Bellingham did. Yeah. No, but
like Rice had so much to do, coach.
Yeah.
He just had so much to do. That was the issue. Like, Trent is not a midfielder. He's still doing his internship on midfield. It's like his third game in midfield for England. Mm. That's it. And Jude, like, as good as he is, you know, Ballon d'Or level player, all that. Like, bro, like, I don't understand why he's doing this Juan Román Riquelme impression. Like, there has to be some discipline about the way you play. You can't just go to places wherever space is because the coach is giving you some freedom. There should be a little more wisdom in the use of that freedom. And I don't know if this is instructions from the coach, but it seems as if he's doing even more than he's done in an English shirt in the past. Because there have been times when he's shown that I'm next up, this is about to be my team, and dominated a game, but still sort of had a panoramic vision of what the mission was. This just feels as if he's trying to do too much. He's trying to play like Sobos is forced to play for Hungary.
Yeah.
It's like, bro, a lot of your teammates are really good players too.
Some of them are better than you.
Yeah, some of them are better, like, honestly. And Foden isn't one of them, but I think today there were periods where Jude actually went over to the left to allow Foden to come in central. And Foden did play better today. Yeah. He still wasn't good, but at least he got those shots off. He hit the post at one point. You know, and that's because Jude sacrificed a bit more than he did in the last game.
Yeah.
But overall, it was just poor. Especially in the midfield. If your midfield isn't right, and we have this coach in the interview afterwards talking about, well, we've never replaced Calvin Phillips. Nigga, are we talking about Calvin Phillips?
the fuck, who the fuck is he? Like, they're talking about, like, they're talking about, like when he said it, I, in my head, I thought he meant Michael Carrick. Because that's, because that's the level of which you talk about we didn't find a replacement for. I'm not being funny. I can go over, we can go over, like, to every single Premier League round next season and find a player on the level of Calvin Phillips in every single match they squad. So,
at Arsenal, that would be Sambi Lokonga.
Well, there we go. So, there is that statement really, really annoying me, because you have players, to my mind, who are in the squad, who I think are already at least on his level. Wharton and Mainoo.
Wharton should be starting, coach.
Yeah, I think.
Wharton should be starting.
Yeah, I think that he should.
That is their six.
Yeah.
He should be starting, period.
I'll tell you what else, right? We see this with a player like Wharton. Because of his style of play, I think it's very hard for him to come into the team and all of a sudden feel overruled, because his style of play is to calm the team down. So he's not someone that's going to come in and no, his style is very calm, composed. Let's actually, if we need to take this thing out of the game, don't worry, that's my bag. If we need to speed it up, don't worry, that's also my bag kind of thing. So, and then you have someone like Declan Rice next to you who, at times, will hold your hand defensively because that's his style of play. He will, but then yes. Now you can also help Declan Rice with the pass. You can give the ball to Declan Rice higher up the pitch, and he can do his thing there. Declan Rice can cover you if you want to go forward as well. So it's like, but with Trent is figuring shit out, and he'll get the ball and he'll do something amazing with it, and then he'll go missing for 10 minutes. And in midfield, I'm sorry, you can't. 10 minutes is an eternity. 10 minutes can lose you the game, basically. So. Someone like Wharton, who's always going to be engaged, or Mainoo, who's always going to try at least to be engaged kind of thing, along with a Declan Rice, along with a Jude Bellingham, that has someone there to essentially tell him, don't fuck around in my zone too much. I'll get you the ball in these areas kind of thing. It makes more sense. But the most annoying thing, Dean, and please, just, I'm not going to talk about him anymore because I feel like he's defending him a bit too much because he's your boy at this point. But he made the exact same sub that he did last game. He took off a player that's not great physically, but, you know, good on the ball, for a player who's good physically and absolutely dog shit on the ball in Conor Gallagher. What the fuck is that? I'm not going to talk about this guy anymore because I think he's dog shit.
I don't know. I think the idea was that, oh, we're supposed to be a pressing team, so we're going to bring on somebody that has energy to press. But it's like, one person can't instigate the press. That's something you guys should have coached the day before the game. But even if you put Wharton into this team and he brings some calm in midfield, I think the bigger problem that we've just kind of ignored because the competition for him has kind of fallen off over the last year, Jordan Pickford.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter what his teammates are doing. It doesn't really matter what they want him to do. Like, when you watch the games and you see their body language and you see what they're trying to tell him to do, he doesn't listen to anybody. He just does his own shit. And his own shit is mostly just booting it because he's not into that weird woke football, because he's a Sean Dyche player. He plays at Everton. He just does whatever the fuck he wants. Like, it's not even that he's bad with his feet. That's not it. Yeah. He's bad with his brain. Yeah. That's the issue. He doesn't feel the game. He doesn't live the game. He doesn't know when to go long. I wouldn't even call it panic. It's just some shit he feels like doing. And Harry Kane has a lot of great qualities. There's almost no flaws in his game besides his speed. But he's not a hold-up merchant. Yeah. That's not the best way to use him. And Jordan Pickford seems to think that he's Dominic Calvert-Lewin or some shit. Yeah. And I don't care how controlled your midfield is. If your goalkeeper treats the ball like a bomb, it's going to be hard for you to control games, period.
Yeah.
You know. And on the goal, do you have any blame for Pickford?
No, to be honest, no, actually. Like, it's hit the post and went in. And he's hit the ball pretty hard as well. So I wouldn't blame him too much. But, you know, that's an interesting point you bring up about Pickford and the effect it has on our, you know, on England's attack and potentially midfield as well. Harry Kane is absolutely great at playing people in, basically, when he comes deep.
He played one for Saka today in the second half.
Yeah, I saw it. I know exactly what he's talking about. And the thing is, you know you're going to make that pass every single time, right? But the issue is now is that because you've got Jude in the team, when you come deep, Jude isn't always aware enough to actually fill that gap. And
it's so strange.
Yeah, and you
come naturally to Jude. That should be Jude's whole.
Yeah, game. You should. It literally should be that, and it feels like it's not happening enough. But even then, Saka is the only one, and Saka is quick. Obviously, he's not lightning, he's not Rashford or anything like that, but he's quick enough, I'd say. But Saka's the only one that's trying to run in behind from wide. So normally when Kane plays that way, at Tottenham, or even at what do you call it, at Bayern now, Bayern, he has two wingers who are absolutely off in terms of their speed that he has a choice to play it to. With England, it's very predictable. It's just, it feels the Southgate is just trying to luck his way, hoping that these players will figure it out. Bro, you need to coach. You actually need to coach. And I feel like it starts from getting your midfield right, get your midfield right, and getting Foden out of the team. I'm sorry, I still haven't dropped that part of this whole thing, because I don't think there's no two ways about it. Phil Foden is a fantastically talented footballer. That's not what we're discussing here. That's like, and I feel like even me having to say that is even annoying. So we're not discussing his talent at all. But he doesn't play well for England. He doesn't fit, to me, this England team, especially with, you're not going to drop Harry Kane. I'm sorry. You're not going to drop Jude Bellingham. You're absolutely not going to drop Bukayo Saka as well. There's a problem here, like in the attack. There's genuinely a problem here. And to me, it's Phil Foden shaped. It just is. I'm not saying he can't come on and play or even start maybe other games, but in this current format of the team, he shouldn't be playing. I'm sorry, he just shouldn't.
Yeah, unless Southgate sleeps and has a great dream where the answers come to him, because the answers feel obvious to me, even given the limitations he's placed on himself with this squad, because watching Kieran Trippier cut in on his right foot from left back every single time, it's like, bro, like, I thought you could use your left foot a little bit, even to just play a pass on the line. Never, never. Just very scared playing. And the guy in front of him is also left-footed and just runs into the middle of the pitch all the time. So you have a whole half of your team that isn't working. So even if we just say, okay, let's rock with that as it is, why not put Trent back? If you want Kyle Walker's speed in the team, play him at center back, essentially. You know, it would be a three without the ball. Yeah. Play him at center back. Let Trent come into the middle as opposed to standing in the middle, because clearly he doesn't know how to stand in the middle. Yeah. He's not a midfielder, but he can come into the middle from right back like he does at his club. Do that. So Walker, Stones, maybe Gehi. I don't know how good he is at defending wide spaces. Mm-hmm. Or Trippier, if you insist on playing him. Whatever. The left side is done. But Trent, if you're going to play him, if you're going to use him as one of your most talented players, he should be playing in his best position, which is actually right back, despite the fact that he can defend. If you put Kyle Walker inside of him, then Kyle Walker can cover those spaces.
Do you know what's actually crazy? Do you know what's actually crazy? If you started Trent, right, and you took out Kyle Walker, which I'm still on the fence about, I wouldn't be that mad at playing Gallagher.
That's what I would want, actually, but it just feels like that's not happening. Yeah, it's not happening. He's like a vice captain, he's a CD player, all that shit.
But I'm saying I wouldn't be mad at someone like Conor Gallagher starting if that's the case. Because at least then, you're obviously going to lose a bunch of quality if Conor Gallagher in the team kind of thing. But then, because Trent is coming in field a lot, Gallagher's job essentially could be, do you know what, just help plug the gaps that Trent will leave because he can't defend. Like, that's your job, because we don't want you to touch the ball, essentially. Like, leave all that shit to Trent. And that could potentially help. That could alleviate a few problems. It would create some more, obviously. But at least you get Trent playing right back, and he can do shit from there that many footballers just can't. So,
like watching Kyle Walker just ignore easy, obvious opportunities to play Saka into space or to play to his feet in certain moments, and, you know, trying to do his own thing because he's a natural runner with the ball. Meanwhile, Trent is a natural passer with the ball, you know, and you're not putting him in the right angles to take advantage of his passing. You're just saying, well, he can't pass generally, so we're just going to Sunday league it and put him in midfield. It's the dumbest thing ever. Also, like you said, Phil Foden just doesn't work up top. Yeah. Removing him helps a lot. I don't even care who they put out there, as long as it's someone who has a willingness to run into space, to just hold the width and run into space. And that will fix a lot of England's problems. Mm-hmm. They're still going to lose to France or Portugal or whoever the fuck, but, you know.
Yeah. I saw someone say earlier today that the moment Germany come up against a serious team, and they mentioned England, I was like, Germany are beating the shit out of England, guys. Like, there's no discussion to be had. I'm sorry. England might raise their game and play a bit better, but Germany are a better side than England, straight up and down. They just are. It's not about quality and names.
Easy 3-1, yeah. Right there. Easy. I've never seen a more obvious 3-1. You know, with England taking the lead, by the way, and people go, yeah. Then Germany comes back and whoops them. Coach, anything else on this game? England are still in control of the group despite all the criticism we've given to them.
I don't have anything to say other than just sacking, man. And when you got Gary Lineker literally going into forensic analysis, and when I say forensic analysis, I mean for the standards that the BBC will allow, but forensic analysis on what Harry Kane can and should be doing better, that lets me know as a point, because when the fuck does Gary Neville ever do something like that? Gary Lineker. When the hell does he ever do something like that?
He's just a host. He's not an
analyst. This is what I'm saying. Like, Michael Richards asked him, what would you do differently? And then the way he replied is almost like, I've been waiting for this. Like, literally, no, seriously. Like, if you guys can find it, like, it was so... I don't see Gary Lineker ever do that. So that lets you know that there's a problem, man. Everyone might just be genuinely fed up with Gareth Southgate, man, because I've been fed up with him, man. The only thing I like about him is the fact that he recognises that he needs Saka. But I think an idiot would even see that, so... Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of idiots on Twitter that think that Saka should be dropped for Phil Foden. But Phil. That's neither here nor there. I think people are coming to the truth very slowly, but coming to the truth nonetheless. Oh, man. Maybe England could do something like Cote d'Ivoire and fire their coach mid-tournament. That might help.
Yeah. I'd know who I'd get in charge. I'd get Paul Merson in charge. I'm not even joking.
Well... On that note, and with my empty wine glass, no offense, Paul. I'm just playing. That would do us for today. Coach, anything else for the people?
Again, like, subscribe, comments, all that shit. Really enjoy talking football with people. So, yeah, let's keep running it up, man.
All right, tell them peace.
Peace. It's the Shirtless Plenty Show.